The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Good evening, and welcome to The Business of Giving. I'm your host, Denver Frederick, and happy holidays and Merry Christmas to you all. This is the time of year where people are buying gifts of all kinds, and many of you may have checked out Consumer Reports to be sure that you're making the best and smartest purchase decision. It's a fascinating organization, and tonight you will get to meet their president and CEO, Marta Tolato, who tells us of one of the keys to their rating system.
I think the key to our ratings is the comparative nature of them, right? We don't look at sort of one set of headphones and say, we think this is great. We look at the whole marketplace and we say, how does it stack up to each other? What are we looking for? And so you get the comparative scientific testing around that, which we think is what consumers really need.
And 2019 will mark the centennial anniversary of Easter Seals, and their president and CEO, Angela Williams, will join us to explain how she looks at all that they do.
We are America's enabler. Enabler in the sense that we enable people to have hope. We enable people to live full and productive lives, no matter what your status, no matter what your age is.
But first, the Business of Giving News Digest for Sunday, December 23rd. CBS Corporation has selected 18 organizations to receive a total of $20 million to help eliminate sexual harassment in the workplace. Refugees who got a phone preloaded with translation and map apps had a much easier time with the transition to their new life. Save the Children Federation was hit not once, but twice by cyber scammers, according to the organization, with crooks getting away with more than $1 million. Much of the loss was recovered via insurance coverage. Boy Scouts of America is considering seeking Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection in the face of continuing litigation regarding sexual abuse claims, according to a report. In Los Angeles, it's now far simpler for nonprofits to find apartments to help people get off the streets thanks to a new app called Lease Up, which looks a bit like Zillow. And finally, the closure of Toys R Us is creating problems this year for the charity Toys for Tots, which has relied on the chain for donation of money and toys. Toys for Tots has struggled to fill the nearly $8 million hole left by the company, which filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection in September. And that is a Business of Giving News Digest for this Sunday evening. I'll be back to speak with Marta Tolato of Consumer Reports right after this.
Technology can change lives, but underserved communities around the world have yet to experience all the benefits technology offers. Benetech is a nonprofit whose mission is to empower communities in need by creating scalable technology solutions. Learn more by visiting benetech.org. Follow the Business of Giving on Twitter at BizOfGive and at Facebook.com/BusinessOfGiving. And now, back to the Business of Giving with your host, Denver Frederick, on AM 970, The Answer.
If an organization is only good as its reputation, then Consumer Reports is plenty good. A trusted source for consumers for over 80 years. Founded in 1936, just as the advertising industry was coming of age, Consumer Reports was one of the first social enterprises, a nonprofit organization who funded its operations and mission in large part through earned income. But the world is changing, and so is Consumer Reports. And here to discuss all of this with us is Marta Tolato, the president and CEO of Consumer Reports. Good evening, Marta, and welcome to the Business of Giving.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Share with us, Marta, some of the history of Consumer Reports and the mission of the organization.
Well, we've been around for 80-plus years, and I always like to say that we reveal the truth, and by virtue of that, we grow consumer power. And back in 1936, our founders observed something in the marketplace, and that is that the products and services were getting only more complex. And they also observed that the power really rested in sellers and manufacturers. They had the information. So how do you go to the marketplace and have a sense of confidence about the products and services that you need to buy.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the birth of Consumer Reports.
What do you think is the biggest misconception that people have about Consumer Reports?
Well, I think one of the biggest misconceptions is actually also a benefit. Everyone knows us because they see us as a confident, trusted partner when they need a product.
Mm-hmm.
And so they identify us as a place that reliably and scientifically tests products. But that's not the only thing we do. We do much more than that.
Such as?
We have a very strong investigative journalism enterprise that really discovers and pursues stories that sometimes do not reveal themselves to us in our testing labs. And we also advocate. And that means we, of course, have tremendous impact when we're able to give you advice about the product that is right for you, the service that is right for you. But it's much more, the impact is much broader than that, because we also have to codify some of those discoveries.
Mm-hmm.
How do you make sure that not just you are safe, but everyone is safe? Perhaps we need to codify a standard, a regulation, and that becomes something that we strive for and we advocate for.
Well, everything you test, you buy at retail in the exact same fashion that any American consumer would. Who does all that shopping for you?
Well, we have secret shoppers.
You do?
We have to go through the same experience that a consumer goes through. And we don't want them to know, the sellers to know who we are or what we're doing there. And so that is exactly what we do. We do the same with cars. We accept no products. We purchase all products ourselves. And I would say that therein lies one of the things that I want all listeners to know, is that we're a nonprofit and mm-hmm. we're independent. And so we don't accept advertising or products to be tested. Again, we have to mirror whatever that journey, that consumer journey is that everyone goes through.
So let's walk through the process a little bit. You test up to 8,000 products a year. Describe for us what goes into this. I, for instance, am in the market for a television set this holiday season. How do you test a television set?
Well, that's a great question, and television sets are one of our sweet spots. First thing we do is we have to look at the market and what television sets are selling, what are consumers most interested in, because we want to serve as many consumers as possible. So we look at those at the marketplace and the marketplace dynamics, and we send out our secret shoppers, and then we're off and running. We get the televisions back, and we hope that you come visit our labs, you would see a room full of screens. And we look at those screens for a number of things. For televisions, the two things. We look at how true those colors are. How gray are they? How deep is the black? We also now have entered the world of smart TVs. And smart TVs is a whole different ballgame.
Oh, I bet it is.
Because smart TVs have software coursing through them. They're hackable. They may be listening to a conversation or the ambient noise in the room. And so in addition to the technology around color and picture and how to optimize for color and picture, we're all now also looking for how much data security and privacy do you have with a smart TV in your room?
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting. Marta, tell us about food. You not only do product reviews, but advocacy as well. And for many of us, myself included, I really don't know what I'm putting inside myself. You know, I was at a conference in Maine just a couple of weeks ago and learned that the average age of an apple you buy in a store is 14 months, probably nothing more than fiber and sugar. And I live on apples. What is something about food that we should all know?
I'm glad that you have a certain amount of skepticism about the food that you put into your mouth. I think we need to do a lot more. We have been in that food space for a while, but we're doing much more. And I want to tell you a little bit about where we're at on that. We've been enhancing our food testing lab because we're seeing some things that are very disturbing. We're seeing drug residue on meat, and we're also seeing heavy metals in children's food and children's juices.
Mm.
And the one that's especially concerning is the overuse of antibiotics. And the overuse of antibiotics in our food system and food production. The more antibiotics we use in that production, the less effective they are going to be in the rise of superbugs. So there are a number of things about food that can really grow into bigger, more systemic problems. And that's why we're really leaning hard into actually food testing and looking at the food system as well.
You also have a 327-acre auto test center in Connecticut. What are some of the things that you're looking at and testing in cars today that weren't even imagined, let's say, a decade or so ago?
Well, the one thing that hasn't changed is safety.
Mm-hmm.
We've always looked at safety, and we've always advocated and prodded for safer driving and safer cars. And the good news is that there is a remarkable amount of technology and discovery right now that is saving lives around cars and safety. So when you think about it, seatbelts.
Mm-hmm.
They were not standard in cars when they first came out, and we did advocate for them. And I think we know all how that turned out.
Yep.
And nobody thinks about the fact that seatbelts are not a luxury item. We now have things like forward collision warning,
mm-hmm.
emergency braking assist. We know, and our testers know, that those technologies save lives. The problem, however, is that those technologies are not standard in cars. They're still add-on luxuries. And so we're looking at those technologies. We're advocating for those to be standard. And then, of course, you know, we think that's the right approach. We had the same approach with backup cameras
mm-hmm.
that were luxury items. And it wasn't until 2018 now that every car must be and include backup cameras.
I didn't even realize that. You know, many people will read a review, let's say on Amazon, from a person who's used a product in their home for over an extended period of time. Does CR have anything that mirrors that kind of experience or usage?
Well, what we know with the incredible platforms that we have and the connectivity that we have to friends, family, the world out there, is that we crave understanding and experience. What is it that my friend is experiencing in this car, this product?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something that we all crave. But the thing I think most consumers are nervous about and unsure about is who to trust
yep.
online. And so while you want to be connected to a peer group that is telling you what their experience is, you also, we now know that some of those platforms can be gamed. And so you don't know how much of those opinions or thoughts or information is actually advertising. And so we'd like to say that, yes, do that, check that, be a part of a platform in a community. But know that when you come to Consumer Reports, you're getting free, no advertising,
mm-hmm.
A nonprofit that's absolutely independent testing that allows you to compare and contrast and understand that we're trying to keep the market honest.
Yeah, yeah. You also do lots of surveys and focus groups, probably more than anybody else other than the Census Bureau. How does that information play into your ratings and all the other things that you do?
We do a lot of focus groups, and I'd say we survey maybe a million a year, which is remarkable. And we do that because we not only want to understand the experience you're having with the product and the service when you buy that, but we want to see what the reliability is over time. How are you experiencing that? What pain points are surfacing now that perhaps didn't before? We go into people's homes now, and we try to understand the user experience. And so that that's a new area for us to be actually not just scientifically testing something, but actually including consumers in that process.
That's great.
And we also have online something we call U-Test.
Mm-hmm.
We give you some tips about how to test something at home, and we want to hear back from you. How did it go? What did you learn?
So after you've tested a product, how do you go about rating it? I mean, how do you express it that something is really good or something's really not so good?
I think the key to our ratings is the comparative nature of them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We don't look at sort of one set of headphones and say, we think this is great. We look at the whole marketplace and we say, how does it stack up to each other?
Mm-hmm.
What are we looking for? And so you get the comparative scientific testing around that, which we think is what consumers really need.
And how would you describe the best?
Well, the best depends on who you are, right? You may be looking for a certain price point. And what we want to direct you to is what is going to serve you and your family at that price point the best. You may be looking for something that is best for, you know, a family vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
That's very different from a sedan. And so it's not, we have to include the consumer in what is the definition of best right? It has to perform, but it also has to meet your needs.
Marta, is there a challenge in updating the latest models of a product that just seem to be continually coming out? I imagine you've done this exhaustive review, and the next thing you know, the company has come out with a new model. How do you handle that?
Well, speed to market is one of our biggest challenges. I don't think we've ever seen the kind of rapid product innovation that we see in the marketplace today.
Yeah.
And so having full market coverage is an extraordinary pressure on us. And what we have to do is one of the things we do is we look at, as I said, what products are consumers gravitating to, and we make sure we attend to those. But we also try to give consumers guidance. If we have it, if we don't have full market coverage on something, we try to give them tips on what to look for.
Mm.
And in terms of speed to market, you know, cell phones, there's constant, you know, product stream. We try, what we want to do is we want to get that cell phone and test it like many other products right away and give you our first impression. Right? So we have to be right there in a timely fashion. And then we say, come back in a week and see the full rating.
So you really try to create that balance between that instantaneous gratification that consumers want, but then a longer view look and a more rigorous testing to let them know how this thing has looked over time.
We know some consumers want to know, just tell me today, what is it?
Oh, yeah.
And others want to dig deeper.
So what have been some of your more popular features and product reviews that readers just love, that go absolutely gangbusters on you?
Well, the ones that always attract the most attention are those products that you buy that are high-priced items. And you're investing quite a bit, and you don't want to get duped. You don't want to get scammed. You actually want quality. This is something that's going to be with you for a while. But again, things are getting more complex, and you want an understanding of what those are. So those always are very, very popular. And the ones that where people are craving information.
Like vitamin supplements?
Well, there's vitamin supplements. There is something we do and spend most of our time and most of our lives on, a mattress.
Yeah.
Right? So how do you get your best night's sleep?
That's opaque.
Very
opaque.
Nobody
knows how to figure out a mattress.
Very opaque. So again, we looked at comparative testing, but we don't only do that. We try to understand, are you a side sleeper?
Mm-hmm.
Are you a back sleeper? What difference does it make? And how does it impact how you function every day? But there are other things that are even more opaque. Think about car insurance.
Yeah.
One of the things we just did is we looked at the data around what determines the price of your car insurance. And it isn't your driving history. There's actually an algorithm that generates your price. And what we learned is that there are discriminatory algorithms. And depending on where you live and what your ethnic and racial composition is, your pricing is different. That's something consumers absolutely cannot discover for themselves.
A very big downside to artificial intelligence. But again, on the other hand, it's people who are programming that artificial intelligence. So what do you hear a lot from people who are clamoring for you to test a product that you just haven't gotten around to yet? What would be at the top of that list?
I think there's so much distrust right now in the marketplace and about institutions generally that we're all trying to navigate the world of connected products. And one of the things folks are unsure about is, if I have a product today and the software changes, you know, what are my rights about getting a software update in real time? What happens? And that is just changing so rapidly that that uncertainty is what we try to address. And I think that that pretty much covers a lot of the what we're seeing. And we're also seeing that in cars, of course. We're now driving computers on wheels. And one of the things we discovered, the upside of that, of course, is in the hardware world, having a recall was really challenging. If you found a faulty product, it's very difficult to reach consumers where they are and say, you've got to return that product, it's not safe. However, when we discovered that there was a problem in Tesla's braking system or in the Samsung phone, it was a first ever over-the-air change on the braking system that secured those brakes for everyone who was driving that particular model. Same with the Samsung exploding phone. When they finally shut that phone down, that was a 100% recall. So innovation is unsettling, but it also comes with some pretty remarkable advantages.
Talk a little bit more to us about privacy. because that is really at the top of everybody's list, I think, these days in terms of their concern. Part of it has to do with their personal information and what is happening to that. But, boy, there are a lot of people, and you talked a little bit about this when you were discussing televisions, who are concerned that their devices may be spying on them. What are you doing in this area around those issues?
That's an area that we're spending a lot of time on. And it's because think about all the advances that Consumer Reports have made over the last 80 years. A lot of those protections apply to the sort of analog hardware world.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
And we've got a Wild West in sort of the digital landscape. So what defines consumer harm when it's software that's embedded in all your products that's very opaque to you? And every day we're seeing some headline about your privacy has been breached. And what we don't have in the marketplace are standards around privacy and securing your data. And that's why we created something called the Digital Standard.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we are experimenting and setting standards for digital products, just as we did, and we talk about our televisions, but also peer-to-peer apps are a very popular way now to have transactions among peers, exchange money. How safe are those? What's the safest? Are they hackable? We just rated those. The other is we're now seeing a great advance in home security systems. But how safe are those home security systems? We just rated those around privacy and data security, and we did find some things. We were able to get one company in 2 days' time make some firmware updates because we did see some dangers for the consumers. So this is going to be a real area of growth in a connected world.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's an unbelievably wonderful service that you're providing to all of us, because there is no question that the regulators have not been able to keep pace with the technology. And to have an organization like yours step in and try to frame things in an intelligent fashion really serves us really well. You know, I mentioned in the opening that you're a social enterprise and the majority of your revenue comes from earned income, primarily subscribers or members. How many members do you currently have, both digitally and those who subscribe to the print edition?
Yes. Being a social enterprise, I would say we are probably the longest-standing social enterprise.
Might have been the first.
In U.S. history,
yeah.
Really. And that means we are purpose-driven, always have been. We have to create products and services that solve real problems for people, and they're willing to go to the market to purchase those. And they also have to have a social impact. 6 million members today, currently, and we have upwards of 15 million unique visitors to our website every month.
And that's been growing.
And that's gone up 40% since the time I arrived, and we're really proud of that. And I think it speaks to the fact that we are a community, a larger community than just our members. We put an extraordinary amount of information on our website that is open to the public, and we think that's an important public service.
What are some of the things you're trying to do to have your members skew a little bit younger? Because the print edition, they're about 65 and maybe a decade or so younger on the digital edition. What has been working as you really appeal to that younger demographic?
What we know is that demographic is on mobile and they are digital natives and they want a tremendous user experience and they want a frictionless experience when they are engaging on platforms and their devices. So we have to be where they are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not enough to have a website and draw them to you. You have to be where they are when they're on their social platforms. You have to be where they are, however they're experiencing their peer group. And I think we've seen we've spent the last 4 years investing in our ability to deliver on those digital. That means a whole new infrastructure and digital capabilities. And I think that has contributed to the growth in our visitors and our website. And we're also just thinking about new products that this age group has seen. And so AskCR is a new product. It's a concierge service. If you don't want to thumb through and flip through and swipe through all the details, you can actually have a one-on-one experience with a CR expert.
Very cool.
And the other thing we're doing that's in beta right now that we're extremely excited about is a browser plugin. So if you could be on any platform, we know so many of us now are shopping online. But how do you have that trusted partner with you when you're shopping on a platform and you're surrounded by advertising and you're not sure if you're being shown the right choice for you. If you're a member of CR, that browser plugin will actually on your screen show you, well, here's what Consumer Reports thinks.
Yeah.
Here's the choice you might be making. So you can look at both.
That's very cool. Shopping assistant, right?
It is shopping assistant.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, that's so interesting about information because there's so much of it out there. But the important thing about information is having it accessible at the very moment you need it. And to be able to do that is a service which is incomparable.
And it's in a moment's notice. The consumer journey today is not what it was in the past.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be where consumers are. You have to be at that point of decision. You get a very small opportunity to do that. And usually you're on your device.
You mentioned at the outset that one of the biggest misconceptions that people have about Consumer Reports is that they don't appreciate or realize all the advocacy work that you do. But you do have an office down in Washington. What's on the top of your advocacy list at the moment, beyond what we've already talked about?
I think one of the things, if you think about the safety issue, whether it's cars, we already talked about how some of those safety technologies need to be standard for all of us. We just got done with a huge report on furniture tip-overs.
Hmm.
Every year, about 15,000 people are affected or harmed by a piece of furniture tipping over. But the real harm comes every 10 days, one child dies as a result of a furniture tip-over. That
wow.
means children are crawling on furniture that's not stable. And so we just did a big report where we did a lot of comparative testing. And that's something that we're advocating for. What are the standards? What is furniture? How does that have to impact? You know, it's not enough to just work with manufacturers. How do we secure that kind of safety for all? You've already mentioned one, and that's privacy.
Yeah.
Regulations have not kept up. And as we know, we see headlines about that every day. So how do we start to create and model some of the standards through our testing that we need to see in the marketplace in a broader scale?
I noted, Marta, that earlier this fall, Consumer Reports has come to television, seen at least in the New York metropolitan area on Saturday mornings on NBC during that education block. Tell us about the show and the impact you've seen from it.
Well, as I said, we're trying to be where consumers are, wherever they are and mm-hmm. however they consume. So they can watch us on television on Saturday mornings, or they can get us on demand.
Yeah.
on Hulu, on the platforms. So what we're trying to do is invite you back into the labs.
Yeah.
There is so much cool stuff that happens in our labs, and we can't host everyone, all 6 million people who are members or the 14 million that see us visit us on the website. But we do invite you to take a look at what's actually going on in the labs. And we give you some tips on safety, on product purchasing that you could take with you.
Well, I've watched it. It's a cool show and has some really great information. It's very engaging. I'd be curious, how has your workforce changed? As you were discussing before, the products you review are no longer just hardware, but they're also software. It's a whole different skill set, isn't it?
It's a whole different skill set. And we've always had a remarkably diverse team in every sense of the word. Think about it. We have scientists, we have journalists, we have advocates, policy experts. And the one thing we know is that we've had to add capacity on the digital side.
Yeah.
So we've seen a lot of change. We have building up our capacity for all those new products and product development that has to happen. We're investing a lot in the growth of that on the digital side. So I think that's essential for us in our ability to deliver.
Mm-hmm. Speak to us a little bit about the corporate culture at Consumer Reports, what you do to shape it and guide it, and why you believe it is such a special place in which to work.
Well, we like to call ourselves, our culture, 1CR culture.
Mm-hmm.
And what 1CR culture is that we have to keep our focus on our mission. Our mission is social impact, making a difference, bending the marketplace, and putting consumers first. And that means we have to have a very open and collaborative culture, because it's the testing and the journalism as well as working in tandem with the advocacy that creates change in the marketplace. And that means that we have to do a lot of cross-teaming and cross-functional work.
Mm-hmm.
That's challenging to do, but we're trying to create the spaces and the opportunities for our teams to get out and to have that create those teams around products.
You've had a very interesting journey on your way to this role as a CEO of Consumer Reports. Tell us a little bit about that trip.
Well, I have always, there's been one thing that's been truly consistent in the choices I've made, and that is giving back.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it is government service, and I had the privilege and the honor to do that, for my state senator. And then it was the nonprofit sector. And I spent a number of years in the nonprofit world, as well as philanthropy. When I was approached about coming to Consumer Reports, it was marvelous because it combined so many and it added an extra tweak, which I had not experienced. And so you have the nonprofit, you are creating change, you have the social impact, you're looking to make change among policymakers, but you also are running an enterprise.
Yeah.
You have to create something that consumers actually want and recognize as something that they need to have. And that revenue has to get poured back into the mission.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's been a tremendous journey because I like the pressure that it puts on us, but also it opens our eyes to what's happening on the market. You cannot keep your eye focused internally. You're always looking at market dynamics, and you always want to have your finger on the pulse of what are the needs and the pain points of consumers.
Yeah, and I also think that sometimes when you have a social enterprise and you depend so heavily on earned income, it really does keep you in touch as opposed to an organization that's getting all their revenues from philanthropy, because you can lose touch that way. But here you had that feedback loop that a lot of nonprofit organizations don't have.
That's true. And that sustainability piece, I think we've always prided ourselves on being self-sustaining. However, what we now know, too, is that you need partnerships
mm-hmm.
to really have impact. And just like a private sector company is looking for venture capital to create new and interesting products, we look to philanthropic partners for seed capital and risk taking. And that's how we sort of stood up our digital standard and our digital lab, saying we need this capability. And we look for philanthropic partners who share our values. And that's how we start to diversify how we can begin to continue to evolve as an enterprise.
And who are some of your key partners?
We have a very diverse group of partners. We have the Ford Foundation, the Knight Foundation, Hewlett. So it's many of the foundations that are really addressing some of the issues that we value and that we have been working on.
Let me close with this, Marta. The way consumers behave and how they go about purchasing the things they need, why, it has been breathtaking how much that's changed in the past decade. Where do you see it going in the next 10 years, and what role do you envision Consumer Reports playing in that evolution?
The consumer journey is constantly evolving. I don't even think we're halfway through
mm-hmm.
what it's going to be. It is going to be a very different journey, whether we have bricks and mortar or whether we have a diverse set of platforms that you can shop online. So I think we're going to continue to see a lot of change in the consumer experience. And I want to be there right at the moment where consumers are needing that partner in a world that's only more opaque and less transparent.
Well, Marta Tolato, the president and CEO of Consumer Reports, I want to thank you so much for being here this evening. Tell us about your website, what's accessible to all visitors there, your subscription and member options, and maybe how people can help financially support the organization through philanthropy.
Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure being here today. I want to hear from all of you. I want to hear from you, and come visit us at consumerreports.org and check out some of the options. We have a wonderful all-access pass as a member. You get to see all the things on our website, but you also get to be part of some of our survey research, and you also get to be part of some of our beta testing on new products, and you get a variety of different newsletters on health and a variety of other things. So have a look at that. And we also have donors. A lot of our members are also part of our donor program, and they often come by and get tours of our labs and take a trip out to the test track. We'd love to host you. So please be a part of what we think is a growing movement to reveal truth and grow consumer power.
Well, it's a great community. Thanks, Marta, so much for being here tonight. It was a real pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you.
I'll be back with more of The Business of Giving right after this.
Most teachers spend over $500 of their own money every year on school supplies because classrooms lack books, art supplies, even pencils. At DonorsChoose.org, you can help schools get the resources they need most. Bring a classroom dream to life. Visit DonorsChoose.org.
If you're you're interested in reading transcripts of guests' interviews from the business of giving, you can find them at denverfrederick.wordpress.com. And now back to the show on AM 970, The Answer.
Oh, 2019 will mark the centennial anniversary of Easter Seals, who was originally known as the National Society for Crippled Children. The organization has a rich history and continues to evolve and modernize. And here to talk about all that with us is Angela Williams, the president and CEO of Easter Seals. Good evening, Angela, and welcome to the Business of Giving.
Good evening, Denver, and thank you so much for having us on the show.
100 years. Wow. That's a lot of history. Share a little bit of it with us, including the significance of the name Easter Seals.
Well, I'd love to just tell you a little bit about the history and the birth of the seal. Actually, if I go back to 1907, we were founded by Ohio businessman Edgar Allan, who lost his son in a streetcar accident. And so because there was no medical services that were adequate to save his son, he sold his business and began a fundraising campaign to build a hospital in his hometown of Elyria, Ohio. Allan was surprised to learn that children with disabilities were often hidden from public view, and it inspired him to make a difference. Thus was founded the National Society for Crippled Children, the first organization of its kind. But Denver, to your question, the birth of the seal, 30 years later in 1934, the organization launched its first ever Easter Seals, and I'm saying that in quotation, campaign to raise money for its services. And to show their support, donors placed the seals on envelopes and letters. And many of us may remember that going door to door and selling those seals and licking those stamps and putting them on envelopes and letters. And in fact, the Cleveland Plain Dealer cartoonist J.H. Doheny designed the first seal. And if I could, we changed our name from the National Society for Crippled Children in 1952 to the new organization, Easter Seals. And so you have the seal, it's emerged over the years, and the campaign continued and triggered nationwide expansion for people who wanted to give to those that were disabled and in need.
You know, just listening to you, Angela, I can almost taste the glue on my tongue again from licking all those seals when I was a kid. I remember that so well. How are you structured? Where are you across the country and beyond, and what's the structure of the organization?
Well, Denver, I am the president and CEO of the National Office of Easter Seals, and we are headquartered in Chicago, Illinois. But we have 71 affiliates throughout the country. And those 71 affiliates operate in thousands of sites and in thousands of homes across the country.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the range of your programs, which are for both children and adults with disabilities and special needs. And they're organized under four major rubrics: live, learn, work, and play. And maybe you can give us a sense of each, starting with live. What are your initiatives there, Angela?
Thank you, Denver, for asking that question, because when people think of Easter Seals, they're still thinking about those stamps and they don't recognize the incredible breadth and depth of the organization. And so these rubrics of live, learn, work, and play help to really structure and explain who we are.
Mm-hmm.
So starting with live, there are folks that need assistance just in their daily lives. And so the programs that help support those initiatives could be such things as respite, providing services of in-home care, or providing services of adult daycare for seniors that don't have a place to go and being cared for by their family members or others who need to go to work. When you think about live, think about assistive technology. Think about not only just people think about wheelchairs, but technology that allows a person that does not have use of their limbs to still be able to communicate and to be able to be a part of society, a part of their families, and a part of their communities. And then when we talk about learning, We have child care services that we offer around the country. We work with the largest provider of care and training for children with autism. And we work with those children to be able to allow them to learn and to grow and to participate in society. The other thing that we offer is children's services. We provide early intervention. We have an online tool called Make the First Five Count. And what that is a tool for young parents with younger children to go online and take a test and answer questions about their child's behavior and abilities, and it flags whether there's potential development issues that the parent needs to know about. Mm-hmm. And then when we talk about work is, we offer employment services around the country, training. We work with individuals with disabilities to allow them to be full participants and to earn money in order to live and survive. There's a statistic, Denver, that I think is absolutely shocking. And that is the statistic that 80% of people with disabilities live in poverty.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we solve for that? One of those ways is to make sure that they, too, have an opportunity to be employed. And then the last framing that we use is play. We know that playing means being able to relax and enjoy, to be able to engage with others, to even enjoy nature. What I'm really pleased about is that our affiliates, a number of them have wonderful, incredible, accessible campsites across the country. Think about this. In the summertime, where a number of kids across America get to go to camp for the summer. Well, children with disabilities have that opportunity as well through Easter Seals.
Mm-hmm. Is it a challenge, Angela, for an organization that does have such a breadth and scope of services, even with these rubrics, to have people know exactly what you do?
You're right. And just because we touch Americans from birth to senior citizen status. And we are a holistic organization. And so as we talk about who we are America's enabler.
Mm-hmm.
Enabler in the sense that we enable people to have hope. We enable people to live full and productive lives, no matter what your status, no matter what your age is.
Yeah, well,
no matter what your socioeconomic status is.
Following up on this strain of thought, Easter Seals recently did a rebrand with a fresh, sleek, and modern look. How did you think about it? What were you looking to say? And what has its impact been?
Well, we are really excited about the rebrand. And let me just say this. This is on the cusp of celebrating our 100 years as an organization and a part of American fabric. And so we do have a rebrand that is fresh. It's exciting. We have a logo that is just incredible. It's Easter Seals, and we have almost looks like sunshine around, rays around the E. But then the other thing that, Denver, I'm not sure if you know this, but we have a tagline. All abilities, limitless possibilities.
Right.
And that is going to be presented to Americans, to reintroduce Americans to Easter Seals and to introduce us to some for the very first time. And when we talk about all abilities, limitless possibilities, we're celebrating joy, we're celebrating hope, we're celebrating possibilities. And so this is really, really incredible. And we're asking folks to stay tuned and watch for commercials and PSAs, and you'll just see how we are celebrating life of all abilities.
That is so smart. You know, so many organizations, I think, focus on the problems, and when you're focusing on the solutions and what you've been able to do for people, that really elevates people, and I think it's also a good strategy for raising more money myself.
Yes, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Speak a little bit about your business model, speaking of money, the different sources of revenue that support your work, and maybe who are some of your key corporate partners?
Thank you. So let me start with our corporate partners, because I really just appreciate, and all of our affiliates also, we appreciate the corporations that care about the work that we're doing, that want to participate, that want to put a stake in the ground and say, we want to partner because we believe in the work of Easter Seals. So we're very grateful to have Comcast, NBC Universal.
Mm-hmm.
We have Century 21, Amway, AC Moore, and there are many, many more corporations. That is just to name a few of our leading ones. CVS has also been a fantastic corporate partner of ours. And we're just really excited because many more are coming and asking, how can we work with Easter Seals? Because we recognize how you provide a holistic approach to the issues facing this country. Now, you asked about our revenue sources. So primarily, our revenue is generated from a number of different ways, starting with the services that we provide. Because we provide medical services, we are reimbursed through Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
We are reimbursed through private insurers for the services that we provide. We also receive a number of government grants. For example, we provide grants for the Senior Community Service Employment Program. This is a program the federal government funds through the Department of Labor to assist seniors that would like to get back into the workplace, and they are in a lower income bracket. So it provides services to teach them how to interview, how to put a resume together.
Mm-hmm.
They get an internship and then job placement. Then, in addition to the government grants that we receive, we also have, as I just outlined, corporate sponsors, and then we have philanthropy, and also direct mail is one of our primary generators of revenue from the philanthropic side.
Let's return to the centennial for a moment. Aside from introducing your new look and your new messaging, what other things do you have planned, if you can give us a sneak peek for 2019?
Well, we are really excited, Denver, I have to say, to gather in Washington, D.C. the third week in March. And we will have a special event at the Smithsonian American Art Museum, beautiful location, to celebrate Easter Seals.
Mm.
And we are inviting our corporate partners. We're inviting those that have been in service to Easter Seals, our wonderful volunteers, without whom we would not be where we are today, from over the decades, coming back and celebrating them, celebrating our clients, and celebrating other leaders across the country. So that's one sneak peek. But in addition to that, we will have local events throughout the country. Each affiliate will be leading their own events. And so we have just a number of things planned to continue to elevate Easter Seals and the great work that we're doing.
And you're going to start the year off with a bang, aren't you, at the Rose Bowl Parade?
Well, thank you for bringing that out. That is absolutely the best way to start the year off. On January 1, we are so excited. We are having the first ever Easter Seals float in the Rose Parade. So I want everyone to stay tuned and watch it. We will have on our float our clients and some of our employees. So it will be really, really exciting. We're so grateful to our Southern California affiliate for taking the lead and having the vision to start the year off right. So Denver, watch on January 1 and look for the Easter Seal float.
How cool is that? I'll make a point. I'll be up. You've been the CEO of Easter Seals for close to a year now. How would you describe, Angela, the corporate culture? And is there anything that you have done to help shape it and make it even better since you've arrived?
Well, Denver, since I've started, as you can imagine, it's been a team effort. One of the things our national office has strived to do is to make sure that our affiliates know that we exist to be in service to them.
Mm-hmm.
We are the brand. We may own the brand, but it is our affiliates that are out there in communities, in homes, touching people's lives, that are actually making the difference and making the brand come alive. So we together are working to develop and continue to elevate a culture of service, because at our heart, that's who we are. And if you go back to the founding of our organization, that's what our founder was about, service to others.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about your personal journey, Angela, on your way to leading Easter Seals, including the influence of your dad, who was one of your role models.
Yes. Well, my dad, when I was born, was a Baptist pastor in Anderson, South Carolina. And from that, he joined the Navy as a chaplain.
Mm-hmm.
But over the years, I watched my parents always be in service and role models and leaders and on the forefront. My dad was also one of those Baptist pastors that was a leader in the civil rights movement. And it was all about affecting the lives of people that were disenfranchised. It's affecting the lives of people that were in need and deserved a seat at the table and deserved to be considered for who they are and not as something different, as someone different.
Mm-hmm.
And so that has totally influenced my life of service. And Denver, I don't know if you know this, but I'm also an ordained minister, graduated from seminary,
mm-hmm.
and continue in my personal life, a life of service to others. And so it's all about wrapping that into how do I give back? And I choose to do so in my private life, but also in the marketplace. I served in the military on active duty for 6.5 years as an Air Force JAG. I served in Desert Storm. And from there, I worked in the federal government as an assistant United States attorney. I worked in the Department of Justice. And from there, I worked on Capitol Hill in the United States Senate, serving on the Senate Judiciary Committee staff as Senator Edward M. Kennedy's special counsel on criminal law. From there, I also served President Bush, George H.W. Bush, and President Bill Clinton on their Hurricane Katrina Foundation. And my role there was to serve as interfaith liaison and helped to give $25 million to churches that were devastated by Hurricane Katrina. And then from there, I also served with the YMCA, the national office, for 11 years. So there's this thread of service throughout my own personal background, and I see all of those varied experiences as contributing to where I am today. And I have to tell you, Denver, this is my dream job.
Well, I can tell you, you sound like you could be 110 years old with everything you've done so far. So,
Denver, watch it. Watch it, Denver.
That's an extraordinary resume. Let me close with this, Angela. Often the impact of an organization can best be told through a story. Share one with us and the impact that Easter Seals has had on an individual and then in turn their family.
That's a good one. I will share with you my own personal story.
Mm-hmm.
Not many people know this, but I do have a grandson that has autism. My son and his family recently moved to Atlanta, Georgia. And one of our affiliates runs a number of Head Start programs. I called our CEO down there, Donna Davidson, and said, Donna, could you please help my grandson? He needs to be in a Head Start program, and he needs to be learning. And she opened up her doors. And my husband and I were just talking about this last night, about how he's really starting to talk and forming sentences and how he's doing so well in school and how every morning his clothes are laid out for him. He gets dressed. He has his little backpack, has his lunch, and is ready, the first child of the three, ready to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
That says a lot about how our people really give their hearts, put themselves on the line to make a difference in people's lives.
Well, what a beautiful story to end on. Well, Angela Williams, the President and CEO of Easter Seals, I want to thank you so much for being here this evening. Tell us about your website, the information that's there, and how listeners can help support this work if they should be so inclined.
Thank you. I'd like to say to your audience, we would love for you to look at our website and see the great work that Easter Seals is doing and let you know that we need your financial support. You can log on to www.easterseals.com. Easter Seals is EASTERSEALS. Please donate today. Children need your support. Our seniors need your support. The veterans that we serve need your support. Thank you.
Well, great. Thanks so much, Angela. It was a real pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you. It was my pleasure to be on the show with you, Denver. And thank you so much for creating the opportunity. And thank you so much for what you do.
Well, our pleasure.
It's time for Take Five, a recurring feature of the business of giving with five or so quick questions posed to the leaders of the world of philanthropy, business, and social enterprise.
We are going to do Take Five with Gail McGovern, the president and CEO of the American Red Cross. Are you ready, Gail?
I am ready.
What should we be worried about?
The increase in natural disasters and getting prepared and making sure that we're ready for an onslaught.
What is today's most underreported story?
Anything that's good news is underreported. Gloria Borger once said, for most people, no news is good news, but for us, good news is no news, right from CNN.
What is one of your favorite documentaries or movies?
I recently saw Above and Beyond, which is the story of the formation of the Israeli Air Force.
Name some organization or person that you have a tremendous amount of respect and admiration for.
So I love Salesforce. They are philanthropic. They're smart. They act out what they say they're going to do, and they have completely transformed the way that we do fundraising and just about everything else at the Red Cross.
What is something you believe that other people think is just insane?
So I believe that our country is in great shape and that despite some of the political arguments that are happening across the aisle, that there's no better place to live and that we're all extremely fortunate.
What have you changed your mind about in the last 10 years, and why?
I've changed my mind a bit about leadership and leading through the heart rather than just through your head.
If you were a kitchen utensil, what would you be?
I think I would be an egg beater. I'm a bit of a whirling dervish.
What do you wish people would be more open and honest about?
I think that people have this odd problem where on social media, they'll say whatever they think, but they have a hard time having difficult conversations. And if we had more of them, we probably would bridge some divides.
If you were to start your career all over again and do something completely different from what you have done, what would that be?
I know this is hard to believe, but I have not regretted a single career move that I made, including being a cashier, working in a cleaning service, working in a factory, being a computer programmer. I learned from every single one of them, and I don't have any regrets.
What is your superpower?
I'm good at reading body language.
If you could have one gigantic billboard anywhere with anything on it, what would you have it say?
Please donate blood.
What is something, whether this is related to your work or not, that you are exceptionally excited about right now?
So I am really excited about how technology is changing the way we do everything. And I think the best is still yet to come.
Name a book that you would give as a gift.
I just finished reading The Billion Dollar Spy. And it read like a novel, and it's nonfiction, and I think everybody should read it. It's cool.
What do you think about when you're driving in the car alone?
I am going to my happy place when I'm driving in the car alone. And my happy place is the Jersey Shore.
What topic would you speak about if you were asked to give a TED Talk on something outside of your main area of expertise?
So I actually did give a TED Talk that was outside my area of expertise. I am a two-time cancer survivor, and the first time I did it very privately, no one even knew I had cancer, and the second time I was very public about it because I had no choice. And as I was standing there talking about my adventure, I was thinking, why the heck did I agree to do this?
What is something about you that very few other people know?
I cry at happy movies.
Given the choice of anyone famous in the world, dead or alive, that you could invite over as a dinner guest, who would that be?
Albert Einstein.
What is the best constructive criticism that you have ever received?
I have been told that often I'm patient to a fault, and I take too long to get to the center of a problem because I talk it out too much.
When is the last time you sang to yourself?
Oh, this morning in the shower.
To someone else?
Yesterday at a staff meeting.
What's the last thing you taught yourself to do?
I'm in the process of trying to teach myself how to speak Spanish. It's waking up some brain cells from, from eighth grade.
What is something that you dislike that everyone else just seems to be in love with?
Downton Abbey.
What advice would you give to your 20-year-old self?
Life doesn't always come out the way you think it's going to be. That sometimes somebody is going to throw a curveball that's going to possibly hit you in the head. And that life is an off-road adventure and you just need to go with it.
And finally, do you have a quote you live your life by or think of often?
My favorite quote is from Clara Barton, the founder of the American Red Cross. She said, "I defy the tyranny of precedent. I always look for ways to improve the past."
Thank you, Gail.
And that is this week's show. Next week, my guest will be Ron Cordes, the co-founder of the Cordes Foundation. He was a pioneer in impact investing and will share with us some of the interesting work they're doing now. Thanks for listening. Have a Merry Christmas and a happy holiday. And do return next Sunday evening for the Business of Giving.
The preceding program is paid for by the friends and partners of the Business of Giving.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.